So we were discussing loving kindness or Metta Sutta, which is available in Sutta Nipata, but sometimes we don't know what was, where it came from, and we think it is available in the Piritpata, the book of the Paritta chanting, but actually the source of Metta Sutta or Karaniya Metta Sutta, which is how we commonly know, is available in the Sutta Nipata, where we discuss Uraga Sutta, Kasiba Raddhaja Sutta, Kaggavisana Sutta. So all these are from Sutta Nipata, and this Metta Sutta is also from Sutta Nipata. And interestingly, this is talking about various good qualities the practitioner has to have. Because sometimes we think we only need to meditate, and we sometimes neglect about certain other good qualities. And here in the Metta Sutta, Buddha prepare ourselves, or Buddha mention, Buddha emphasize about very interesting good qualities which are really conducive for our meditation, really conducive for the attainment of Nibbana. So that's why how Buddha starts it. Karaniyang atta kusalena, yantang santang padang abhisamecha. The one who is targeting Nibbana, who is targeting the attainment of Nibbana, and who is now doing what is best for him. Because you know, attainment of Nibbana is not a mere chance. It's a fully dependent on various other conditions. So we need to fulfill certain aspects of morality, we need to fulfill certain aspects of concentration, and we need to fulfill certain aspects of wisdom. That is how we basically consider Sila Samadhi Panya. So that is the very much the main focal. On the other hand, there are various other qualities which are helpful to fulfill all these three. Certain aspects are necessary to fulfill morality, certain other qualities are necessary to fulfill in order to have samadhi, and certain other aspects are necessary to fulfill certain aspects of wisdom. So overall, there has to be a fair amount of very good qualities which one has to pay attention if one really wants or honestly wants to attain Nibbana. That's what Buddha mentioned here. Whoever expecting one's own welfare, and whoever expecting the attainment of Nibbana, and that is his goal, then he has to fulfill or think about these good qualities. And Buddha starts with Sakko, being skillful, then honest, being really honest, being upright, and who is gentle, and again ready to listen or easy to listen, and one can easily advise, and soft in qualities, and again quite down to earth, basically not being arrogant, not being proud, basically living on the ground, living on the earth, that kind of a very humble attitude. So this is what we already discussed in the first verse. And the second verse also we discussed last time, santussako. That means have to be content. Because nowadays, particularly as lay people, say sometimes we need this and we need that, and never feel happy. So many things are necessary, and we are always comparing ourselves with others, and always feeling unhappy because we have something that we don't have. We can always think about something which is lacking. Others may be having, but I don't have. So that makes us really unhappy. That makes us really little worried. And that is something that we need to recognize. Is it something that we really need? Is it something we really need, or simply we are craving for some unnecessary thing because we have seen that my friend is having that, my neighbor is having that, my colleague is having that, whoever I am associating at my office is having that. So is it because of that am I asking it? Am I longing for it? Am I desiring for it? Or is it really because I really need it? Because this is something that we sometimes have to carefully think. So why am I desiring something? Is it really a requirement? Or is it a kind of conditioning happened through some other process? Because I have seen, I have noticed that someone else is using it. So there is a kind of a desire now arising to have the same thing. It is a kind of a human conditioning happens, because it is not because always that I am working or I am desiring because of a real need. But sometimes we have seen that someone else is using it. As a result of that, our mind get conditioned to have the same thing. So this is something going on. So every time we see an advertisement, our mind get conditioned. A little bit of an influence getting developed. So a requirement being built up now. It is not a real requirement, but slowly, unknowingly, because of these little influences, now a requirement being built up in our mind. And ultimately we need it. So as a result of that, till we have that, till we are going to own that, we being discontent. We are not happy. We want that. I need it. Without it, I can't live. So that is how the mind is building up. Mind is in a way deluding us. But the opposite is something Buddha mentioned here, santusako. How one is contented. You might not have the best thing, but you can survive yourself. You can maintain your family. And you are quite happy with that. Because there is no any kind of a perfect situation. We always have imperfections. We always have certain shortcomings. Are we able to live with it? Are we able to cope up with it? So this is where the santusako Buddha mentioned that how one is contented. Then subharo, particularly how one can be easily supported. Say for example, if your family, if your children are always asking too many things, then as a father, as a mother, you can't always do it. You can't always fulfill them because they are having endless desires. So similarly, particularly when talking about this for the monks, so if monks are asking too many things, the lay people get repelled from them. Lay people start not going to that temple because they are asking too many things. Every day they are asking something. Every day they have something to construct. Every day they have some project. So always asking money. So then it's not easy to support. But the opposite is something that Buddha encouraged here. How one can be subharu. That means how one can be easily supported. So one is not asking much. So if it is available, then one is happy. If it is not available, still one can manage. So this is interestingly mentioned in one of the, I think it's one in the Theragatha, where Venerable Nalaka mentioned. So he mentioned, either he receives Pindapatha alms, then he comes back happily to the dwelling place, that is nothing but a root of a tree. And even if he doesn't receive something, still he is happy, he's coming back to the root of the tree. That's it. So very contented mind. Either he have food or not have, he's not worried about it. He's not really bothered about it. So as monks, particularly therefore with the advice, how we should be frugal, how we should be contented with little, appichata. And with appichata, one may get into the santutti, where having little, still one can be happy. And then interestingly, Buddha talks about appakicca, having less work, less commitments, less responsibilities. Because sometimes when there are so many responsibilities, we don't have time and we are being burdened. Always have to have something to be worried. Always have some anticipation. Always anxious. There are a lot of responsibilities, a lot of liabilities. Then of course very difficult to meditate, because always when you sit, you have a lot of responsibility coming to your mind, whether that is fulfilled, whether that is going to be alright, whether that is going to be go wrong. So always things are coming to your mind. Appakicca basically means that you have less responsibilities, less tasks, less projects, so that your mind is somewhat lighter. But interestingly, actually, we want to have something, we want to have projects, we want to have a lot of responsibilities, because then only we feel that I am living, I am being highlighted, I am being needed, I am being considered as an important person, I am being considered as a clever person, I am being considered as a very special person, I am being considered as an advisor, I am being considered as a always necessary person, an important person, a good teacher, or whatever the way. So we feel important when there are so much of responsibilities. So this is why we get on to so many tasks. So we need something. We want to show our colors. We want to show our skill. Because sometimes actually these are the way that we encourage people, we motivate people. You should do this, you should do that, you should try to have more education, you should try to have more promotion. So likewise, we motivate people. But sometimes we need to find out what is the balance. Where are we going to stop? Are we having enough? Am I asking too many work? Is it to show off? Or they really want my service? Am I going to have so many tasks? By involving with tasks, am I really developing mindfulness, really developing, say, the Buddha's teaching, or am I deviating from that? Am I occupying myself? Am I getting distracted because of these works? Because sometimes, Kamma Ramata, Buddha mentioned, Kamma Ramata is something where we want to get involved with so many works. One is not enough. Something is not enough. Few works is not enough. You need to have so many works, one after the other, so you feel always involved. Your mind has always something to worry. Your mind has something always to occupy. So this is the mentality we typically have. But the practice, the Buddha's teaching, helping us to look at this, helping us to understand this kind of a tendency we have. So why we want so much work? Is this because of the self-importance that we are trying to attribute? Because sometimes there is even a kind of a mental disease where, say, someone is working very hard, so much dedicated for many years, and after becoming old at the age of 55, 60, suppose he getting retired. So after that, his value, his say service is not that required. So he come back home and he's at home. There is no responsibility and there are no much tasks. Now he feel lonely, he feel not important, and he feel that he is not required. As a result of that, the person can even be depressed. Because we felt something that really important, we are being hired, we are being required, we are being recognized when we are working. But when we are retired, we don't feel that. Then people get depressed. Now, on the other hand, what we need to understand here is that kind of a self-promotion, kind of an the eye-making, mind-making, or the self-view being promoted when we are sometimes being recognized, sometimes given some responsible tasks, and when we feel required, when we feel important, and when we are fully occupied, involved, then we have a lot of strong self-view. But on the other hand, when we have less work, we can meditate, we can be mindful, we can relax, we can maintain a restful state of mind. So therefore, Buddha encouraged that as practitioners, we need to have a rest. We need to have a time for us. We need to have a time for spiritual development. Spiritual development does not involve too much tasks. Rather, at the beginning, it is true that we have to meditate. That is also has become a task. But later, when one develops further and further, it becoming more and more relaxed attitude, and you are absorbing meditation to your whole life, then it is a kind of a smooth process, kind of a daily activity or daily process that you are doing, And we can't even say it is doing, very much like you are being mindful, fully aware of what is going on. And not only you are fully aware of external things, you are fully aware of internal things. You are fully aware of internal world, about your body, you are fully aware, about your mind, you are fully aware. So you now basically understand what is really going on, what is really happening in your mind. So this is how we are, in a way, we can understand how we start to understand ourselves, how our mind works. So in order to do that, we need a little bit of a restful time so that we are relaxed and has less responsibilities and have some time to understand ourselves. So if we have too many things, too many tasks, then we can't do it because we are being fully distracted, fully involved, fully burdened. But on the other hand, if we have some time, then definitely we can make use of effectively. Appakicho, then Sallahukavutti, where Buddha mentioned fairly frugal way of life, a relaxed way of life, light way of life. Santindriyo, having restrained faculties. So the five faculties particularly, eyes, ears, nose, tongue and body. So if we are not restraining, then definitely we are getting into trouble. So if we are not maintaining that restrainment, sila, if we're forgetting it, and if we don't know the moderation, then definitely we are going to trouble. And sometimes it is harmful to ourselves, and even sometimes it is harmful to the others. And nipako, so that is where you are very careful. You have a judicious, very careful, very precise kind of an attitude. So the quite intelligent in a way. Appa gabbo kulesu ananugiddo. They are cautious without greed when among families. Now, without greed when among families, particularly apply to the monks. There are sometimes when you have several devotees and you are dayakas, and probably there is a kind of a miserliness, attachment, greed, desire may arise towards those families, and you want them to be your devotees. If they are associating someone else, another monk, you feel upset. This is a kind of a sickness that the monks can have. So probably here Buddha actually advised monks, so okay, don't do that. So don't be attached to the families. They may be devotees, they may be good families, but you should behave as a monk. You should maintain a kind of a distance, not having any kind of too close attachment, too close association, too close relationship. Rather, you got to maintain kind of a distance. So the third verse here mentioned, Nachakuddhan samachare kinchiyena vinyu pare upavadeyo. Now here, actually, in general, Buddha mentioned here, he is not doing anything, however it may be slight, very, very little task, which is ultimately going to be reproved or might criticize by a good person. So basically that means you are careful of what you are doing. You are careful of what you are talking. And if possible, you are careful of what you are thinking, because later time, if someone understood that you have done something which is not suitable, which is not appropriate, you'll be criticized. And say you are going for something and you are participating as a group and you are representing the country. And if you do something wrong, which is not appropriate, beyond your boundary, and which is not acceptable, then the whole team get blamed, whole country being fairly disappointed. You are not able to maintain the good rapport of the country because you have not restrained, and you are being later criticized. So this is what Buddha highlights here. Now, particularly when we are representing the Sangha, so we all are now under the flag of the Buddha. as a monk, so if we do something wrong, so the whole Sangha being criticized. Now probably you all know that what is happening in Sri Lanka, so many things are there. So the whole Sangha being criticized by maybe the lay people, by the judges, and by some other good people. So they criticize why these monks are doing like this. And maybe as a team, that I mentioned, say you are participating as a group, as a team, as a college, as an institution. So we always have some sort of regulations, rules and regulations. So they are there for some purpose. But if we are trying to violate it, then ultimately the whole team, whole group, whole country, whole Sangha get blamed, get criticized. That's why here Buddha mentioned, Najakuddhan samachare kinchiyena vinyu pare upodayi. Now the good people, the wise people are the one going to criticize. That means they are more intelligent, they are more wise than us. And we are the ones who has breached a precept. So therefore Buddha advised, don't do it. So if you very well know later, you being criticized for something, they may find that you are doing something wrong. So then don't do it. He should not do anything, however slight, because of which otherwise people might criticize him. And then now Buddha actually turns into the metta. Sukhinova kemino hantu. Sabbe satta bhavantu sukhitatta. Now actually the sutta turns into the metta side. So now the person is having kind of a unconditioned love. May all beings be happy and secure. May they be inwardly happy. Bhavantu sukhitatta. Now sabbe satta. So here actually there is no any kind of a boundary, thinking that only my country people, only my nation, or only human beings. So there is no such kind of a categorization. Rather, one is capable of spreading metta to everyone. So when someone is practicing metta, meditation, systematically, step by step, so this is how actually someone is doing it. So he may start with basically doing metta for himself first. May I be happy, may I be well, may I be free from suffering. Probably may I attain Nibbana. So you can add little phrases, short phrases, so that you are feeling more confident, you're feeling more lovable, you feel more happy. And you need to feel it. It is not, at the beginning it may be a little artificial thinking like that, but later slowly as you get familiarized with it, and as you start honestly feeling it, and you are honestly wishing it, then actually you start feeling it. The metta quality, you can start feeling it. Now, previously it may be simply phrases, words, but there is no significant change in the heart. But later, actually, as you are improving, you may recognize kind of a very lovable feeling growing in the heart towards yourself. And later you are spreading that metta to a person who is a respectable person, same sex respectable person. So then you can spread metta towards that person, thinking that he is in front of you. And he may be in a very pleasant smile, an appreciative mood. And you are now spreading metta towards him, very much like you are bathing him with metta, something like that. So that is another level of metta. You now start spreading metta to another person. Now you can further promote that, and you can take it to the level of same metta, same amount of metta you have towards yourself. Now the same amount is maintained, you can do it to yourself and even to that respectable person. And slowly now you are training your mind, and you are now taking another person, another respectable person, and maybe later, once you are competent, you can take another, say, a likable person, a person who you like, and now you can spread metta towards him also, and now you can take a kind of a middling, a neutral person to him also. Now you are spreading metta to the same amount. And even later, you can take a person that you don't like, and even to him, now you can try to spread metta. And that is how we are slowly training the mind in metta. Now you can even take some others, say all the human beings in the front, all the human beings in your right direction, all the human beings in your rear direction, all the human beings on your left direction, all the human beings in the upper direction, all the human beings in the below direction. So likewise, you can now expand. And slowly you can take the other categories of beings as well. Maybe devas, maybe deities, maybe animals, maybe whoever other beings, whatever you think of, you can now include. Slowly you are including. Ultimately, actually, you have no boundary. Simply you are spreading metta to all the beings. All the beings in the front, all the beings into your right, all the beings into your rear, all the beings into your left, all the beings into your up, all the beings into your down. Now slowly now you are even breaking the directions or boundaries, categories. Now you have boundless metta, what we call as the metta cheto vimutti. So that is actually being explained further. Ekechipana bhutatti tasava thavarava anavasesa digavaye mahantava majjima rassa kanuka thula. So now Buddha little explained. So here, what are the different conceptual categorizations we as people have? So sometimes we think, okay, long beings, like say serpents, and maybe large beings, say like elephants, whales. So likewise, there are pretty large beings are there. And there may be some middle-sized beings, like humans, maybe. And then rasa, that means short beings, maybe little animals, maybe insects. So likewise, anukathula. So that means even very, very refined kind of beings, like bacteria, virus, and whatever, microbes, micro level also included. So that means there is no any boundary right now. There is no any particular category that only to that category I am spreading metta. So you are now including all these different categorizations we conceptually have made in our human mind. And here, ekechipana bhutatti tasava thavarava. So that means tasa means the beings who are not firm. So basically, now arahants are the ones who are free from any fear. So they are the steady ones. They are the stable ones. All the other beings are unstable. So their minds are always subjected to some kind of agitation, some kind of a fear. So that is why they are called tasa. So they are being always subjected to some sort of a fear. So if you can recognize in the animal realm, so they always have some sort of a fear. When another animal come and catch me, so that kind of a fear is always governing, always prevalent in the minds of the animals. Because that animal world is fully dependent on catching each other, hitting each other, killing each other. So always therefore their minds are subjected to some kind of a fear. Here Buddha categorized therefore such kind of unstable, fearful beings or the ones free from fear, so that they are the arahants, and we can even include anagamis. So that category. So that means different way of categorizations now Buddha coming up. So we are now including all these different categories into the picture. Anavasesa, that means now we are not omitting anybody. Somehow we are including all the different categorizations. Dittavayeva additta, and probably whoever the beings that we have seen and whoever the beings that we haven't seen. Yecha dure vasanti avidure. I mean, there may be beings who are very far from us and there may be beings who are closer to us. Bhutava sambhavesiva, and already arisen beings, already born beings, some bhavesiva who are in the process of birth. Sabbe satta bhavantu sukhatatta. May all the beings be well and happy. You can now include metta towards all the beings. Bhavantu sukhatatta. May all beings inwardly be happy, externally happy. So we are wishing this. You are expecting this. You are hoping this. So it is not kind of a simply through words, but you honestly wish it. Now you can recognize if people are with this kind of a mind, how beautiful this world is. Now you can recognize what is the status of the today's world. The whole world is on the edge of a war. Everyone is trying to hit each other. Everyone is trying to kill each other. Everyone is trying to have victory by defeating another. So this is the kind of a mentality as human beings today we have. The whole world leaders are having. But if we are following Buddha's teaching, if we can understand the depth of this Metta Sutta, you can recognize what a way Buddha is teaching us. What is the direction that Buddha is leading us. And he hasn't given any kind of omission to any category of beings. Rather, he includes all the beings. Actually, we are the ones mentally, conceptually, prepared all these different categorizations, groupings, because of our human ignorance. But here Buddha systematically removing that categorization and ultimately including all the beings and now preparing our mind with unconditioned love. There is no any boundary, there is no any condition. Rather, one is now capable of spreading metta to the whole universe. Okay, with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Asare Bhante, we have 5 questions today. Before we start the questions, I would like to make a quick announcement. This is regarding the time change for UK participants. I think towards the end of October that their daylight saving time came into operation. So, but we here, we changed at the beginning of October in Sydney, but we kept the same time. But I don't know if the time change is affecting the actual start time for UK participants. If you think that it's a bit of a problem joining at that time, I think it's 7:30 a.m. on a Sunday. So if you have any, if you feel it's inconvenient or anything, we can have a discussion on what we want to do. So if you could please, if there's anyone from the UK joining in today, or if you can pass on the message to the others who would like to communicate that, if you can drop us an email, then we will check on that as well. So that's just a quick announcement. Okay, so we'll start with the questions, Bhante. So first question is on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, can you explain how one should start looking at the element characteristics in the mindful practice? My sitting and walking practice are progressing well, and thank you for this valuable program. Focusing on the breath is my sitting practice, where I do a bit of in and out noting at first. I can observe multiple sensations of the breath, which fades away quickly with the breath. I reach a calming, relaxing state without the sensation of the breath afterwards. However, I cannot stay in this space for long time, as the focus comes down to the body and the posture. I feel parts of the body, the touching sensation, and some hot and cold patches. How do I start being mindful on element characteristics from this state with metta? That's another question.
Now, it may, if it is happening naturally, that is the best way. So it is not that you are trying to purposely, say, focus your attention to element characteristics. Rather, assume that you are continuing your anapanasati meditation, mindfulness of breathing, and you come to a certain stage, say, breathing become fairly subtle and your mind is still very focused. At the same time, now you feel various sensations throughout the body. Here and there, different sensations are available. So those sensations may be little aches, little pains, or they can manifest as maybe tingling sensations, maybe vibrations. or maybe movements, or maybe tightness, maybe little stiffness, little hardness, maybe cooling sensations, maybe heating sensations. So likewise, many different ways they can manifest. So actually we don't have control. We can't purposely arouse these sensations. Rather, what happens is, so they are actually there, but when we develop mindfulness and fair amount of clear comprehension, then actually these sensations available in the body become more and more visible, more and more noticeable. Then you can pay attention to them. So that would be the most easiest way. And on the other hand, purposely you can do a little bit of initiation to this process by paying attention to the touching points. Say for example, if you are keeping your, say, one hand on top of the other, then there may be a slight weight you are feeling on the lower hand. So that is a element characteristic. And on the other hand, you may feel a little bit of a heat between the two arms, between the two hands. So that is another element characteristic. And if there are two legs touching each other, there may be a little heat available, there may be a little rough sensation available, stiffness available. So likewise, you can recognize these touching points, and most probably at those touching points, you can recognize certain element characteristics. So that actually helps you to understand these element characteristics. Those are more prominent at those touching points. So that way you are, in a way, you are teaching the mind. So they are the touching points. They are the element characteristics. Likewise, you are teaching to the mind. You are guiding the mind. And later, once mind is familiar, then you don't need to do such kind of a guidance. Rather, mind itself is capable of understanding various sensations or various element characteristics available throughout the body.
Question number 2 of 5. This is again mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during the guidance sitting practice today, my breath faded away very quickly and I managed to establish mindfulness without the meditation object of breath in a relaxed, spacious space. After several minutes, the awareness came to the body and I could feel a faint rising and falling of the abdomen. I'm not sure if I should focus on rising and falling at this stage, since I started with observing the breath. Appreciate Bhante's advice. With metta. That's the end of the question.
Actually, I mean, we don't need to really categorize like that. So, because ultimately, now the whole body become kind of a field of our examination. Because we are preparing certain amount of focused attention, fair amount of, say, collectedness, concentration in our mind, so that various sensations available throughout the body is capable, I mean, we are capable of recognizing, we are capable of observing. So, Anapanasati in that sense is simply a tool to prepare our mind. So, once it is prepared, I mean, either you can use Anapanasati itself to continue, and either you can use maybe rising and falling and various other sensations, other vibrations available at any place in the body. So therefore, you don't need to worry whether now I need to switch to rising and falling. I mean, you can even switch to something else. And actually, it depends how capable you are to maintain the available mindfulness, available concentration of the mind. Because if you are already have sharp mindfulness, sharp concentration now, and again, not only that, you can quickly place your concentration, quickly place your attention onto any place of the body, so that means you are now capable. But sometimes problem is, as a beginner, when you are developing concentration, actually, once you shift to another place, another object, your concentration collapse. Your concentration become very weak. Then you need to rebuild it. Again, you need to put your attention to Anapanasati. Again, you need to rebuild. But these things are only temporary. The more you practice, more capable you are. You become more and more capable of maintaining your attention, keeping your attention at a particular place, and not only a one fixed place, but now you can place your attention any place, anywhere, very quickly. So that is a kind of a skill that is being developed. and fair amount of training for that type of practice you are getting through walking meditation. Because in walking meditation, the object is constantly changing and the place of attention is always changing. Always in the sense constantly changing. Say, if you are placing attention on the left foot, next time you need to pay attention on to the right foot. So right foot is object-wise, it is different, and the place-wise is also different. Now we are developing that kind of a skill throughout the walking meditation. Later you can use that skill during the other, say, element meditation, say Dhatu Manasikara kind of meditation, because you don't know where the new object going to appear. Element characteristic is going to appear, you don't know. You don't know what type of element characteristic is going to appear, and you don't know where it is going to appear. Where the prominent characteristic is going to appear. But the skill being developed. So when that skill is available, you can quickly apply that. So therefore, I mean, you can check whether you already have that skill or you are developing it. So if you are developing it, if you are not yet confident, then you better continue with Anapanasati for some more time. Because you need a little bit of concentration, but later all these things are going to change. Say when you are developing yourself further and further, so this concentration you develop right now or you have right now start evolving even. It may not be the concentration we are talking at the beginning, but we are talking at the end or at the middle. So that is also changing. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 5. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, during our mindful practice, we can relate to the impermanent, anicca, and non-self or non-governable, anatta natures through our observations of the objects of mindfulness. It is not easy to relate to suffering, dukkha, nature using these observations. Much merits if Venerable Sir can explain the above. With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, actually, that depends on our nature of the character. Now, we have different characters. Now, certain people are more towards the thinking. Certain people are more towards, kind of investigation. Certain people are more towards, lust. Certain people are more towards anger. So likewise, different characters are available within ourselves. So certain people, they have natural understanding about the suffering. So their mind get more inclined towards the understanding of suffering, and they really understand that, and they are talking about that. And certain others talking about always the impermanence. Everywhere they see, they see the impermanence. And certain others, sometimes they talk about the non-self. So it happens naturally, and we don't need to therefore force ourselves to recognize all three. If you are able to understand anicca, impermanence, so that is very interesting, very powerful insight. And you can actually maintain that as your main path. And through that path, we can develop and we can go a long distance. And Buddha mentioned now, if one is practicing anicca, impermanence, and that is capable of eradicating all the defilements, all the anusayas, latent tendencies, one can uproot using the perception of anicca. You can recognize, you can probably understand, it's available in the Anicca Sanya Sutta, how beautifully, how strongly Buddha recommended that. So if one is having this kind of very, very strong understanding about the impermanence, Buddha mentioned he is capable of removing all the defilements. So similarly, if one has proper understanding of dukkha, suffering, the same kind of capability is there. Similarly, if one has strong understanding about anatta, the same results, benefits are there. So therefore, I mean, all these three are very competent areas of insight, and we don't need to force ourselves to have all three. So if it is available, no problem. But if it is not available, but if you are more familiar with impermanence, or if you are more familiar with non-self, and you don't need to worry that I don't have much familiarity with dukkha, because you already have two. Therefore, so it is not compulsory to have all three. Having one is enough. So if you already have one, be happy about it. One is better than nothing. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 5. This is regarding the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Bhante, last time I could not understand the second line of the first verse. Yantam santam padam abhisamecha. I checked online and found that this means having glimpsed the state of perfect peace. What is the glimpse of perfect peace, Bhante? That's another question.
Yeah, that is Nibbana. Santam padam, santa pada. So santa pada, Buddha refers to Nibbana. You know, santa, santi pada means Nibbana. Then you know, santa muni is a term referred to Buddha, because Buddha is the one attained Nibbana, who first attained Nibbana. So therefore it is, he mentioned, there's a synonym for Buddha as santa muni. Similarly, shanta, santa, and these are the terms, santi pada is a term referred to Nibbana. So one who is inclined towards Nibbana, the peaceful state, so that is with about whom that we are talking in this Karaniya Metta Sutta. Yeah.
This question number 5, so that's the last question. This again on the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Bhante, in what circumstances is it important to practice Metta meditation? And how does one do this without attachment to other beings? Thank you. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it's a good question. So basically, sometimes, say as a beginner, if you have too much anger, if you already had a fight with your wife, then it may be difficult to immediately start anapanasati or maybe rising and falling or whatever it is. Then you need to have a little bit of metta to calm down, to relax, to again arouse some amount of, say, happiness in your mind. Because, you know, the meditation, in order to be successful, mind has to be happy. You may have a very serious kind of understanding about the danger of samsara. But if you are trying to meditate with that kind of a strong, serious kind of an attitude, it's very difficult to have concentration, because mind is too much serious, too much depressed even. But on the other hand, during meditation, you need to have a very pleasant, harmonious kind of an attitude. In order to have this, you can use loving kindness meditation. So whenever you are sitting, you can check what is the state of the mind. As I mentioned, if you had a kind of an argument, if you had a kind of a quarrel, if someone has blamed you, if someone has neglected you, if someone didn't make enough respect. So these are little things sometimes we make us upset. So if we are sitting with this kind of a negative attitude, or even if we are sitting with some anger, definitely we can't practice meditation like Anapanasati. It's very difficult. Even rising and falling. On such situation, we better practice metta. That's a kind of a preparation of the mind. So you are again slowly developing some metta towards yourself, towards another person. Now you are slowly training the mind so that again it becomes happy. Then once it is happy, now you can start Anapanasati or rising and falling or elements meditation or Vedana Anupassana, whatever the Satipatthana practice, you can start. And Buddha actually mentioned in certain other places, while even you are practicing vipassana, say you are practicing mindfulness and various other vipassana techniques, that practicing satipatthana, and Buddha mentioned sometimes your mind can become little dry, because what you are experiencing is impermanence, what you are experiencing is suffering, what you are experiencing is non-self, because sometimes these understandings can make the mind little dry. So you feel lethargic, you feel upset, you feel really down, a little agitated. It can happen even because of the vipassana practice. On such occasions, Buddha mentioned, okay, you better now switch to metta. You better now switch to buddhanusati. You better now switch to a very pleasant kind of a samatha practice, Because you need, your mind requires that kind of a little softening now. You need a little bit of a happiness now. As I mentioned, happiness is a requirement. That is why Buddha talks about the Piti Sambojjhanga. Piti, the rapture as an enlightenment factor. So if your mind is extremely dry, doesn't have any kind of a happiness, any joy, then it is very difficult. So on such occasions, Buddha mentioned, okay, purposely now you better stop vipassana, you better switch to a little bit of samatha practice, particularly say loving kindness meditation, and then you can little bit of enjoy that, you can train your mind in that, and once it is happy, now again you can switch back to vipassana. And on the other hand, and loving kindness is not merely a samatha meditation. Actually, by developing fair amount of loving kindness meditation, you can uplift it to a very high level, and you can use metta, cheto, vimutti as a base for your vipassana. That is another approach actually available. That is actually, it is not just developing metta, as I explained during this during the sermon. Say, as you are developing step by step, systematically, when you are developing loving kindness, you can reach to a state kind of a boundless kind of metta is available. So you are becoming a kind of a source of metta to all the directions, to all the beings. Now you can spread metta. So that is where what we call as the ultimum of the metta meditation, where you reach that kind of a unbound, so kind of boundless kind of metta. Metta chetunuti. If you are capable of reaching that state again and again, you can spend your time there, and now you start practicing vipassana. That's the kind of a ground that you can maintain. So that is another approach. And on the other hand, there is another approach available using metta meditation. Say you are developing metta to some extent, and as you start feeling it, see, at the beginning only you need to initiate this process. You need to train your mind to have metta. So you are training your mind. Later, you start feeling metta. Now your heart feels metta. So at that time, you can stop further generating metta purposely or kind of using artificial kind of fooling of metta. Rather, now you can pay attention to the loving kindness feeling available in your heart. Actually, at that time, what we are doing is you are turning your attention towards the feeling of metta. So that means Vedananupassana. So now, from that point onwards, actually, you can practice vipassana. So therefore, you can approach, you can use metta as a tool to practice vipassana. So it is very much like samatha-oriented vipassana. First, you are practicing samatha using loving kindness meditation, and once you are established there, once you are able to recognize that metta feeling, either you can use it as a foundation, as a vedananupassana technique, or you can even uplift to the level of boundless metta kind of situation, and you can use that as a ground for vipassana. So likewise, there are many methods available. So these are the occasions actually one can practice metta.
Thank you, Mandir. So that is the end of the written questions. We have about 5 minutes, so we will close the program for today. First, I would like to thank Pante for his valuable time, and also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, for enabling this program. Would also like to thank the participants for joining the program today and practicing and sharing the question. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Ya, teruvan sarnai, sukhi hotu.